we're going to try to get through conflict of interest tonight, and if we do it within a reasonable time, I will lobby some more. You people are awfully far away. Personally, I just assume if you would get into the act, so don't feel hesitant at any time in voicing your opinion.
Yeah, well, that's off in the middle of Section 7. You've got a scratch copy of everything we did Friday, and dated today, and it says work session amendments to 2529. Okay. It's actually dated tomorrow, I think.
2529.
Oh, it's in the folder, I bet, Bob.
Yes. Under here.
Yeah. Oh. Well, before we get involved too far, the proposed amendment to House Bill 2529, you have before you. And Granton thinks we cut off that or any member of the Legislative Assembly, and I don't know how the rest of you have yours marked. It's the one page amendment peg that was handed out to you tonight.
I've got another one here if you don't have it.
Do you remember, Chuck? Did we take that out?
Mr. Chairman, it was my impression that your question was whether or not you should speak to members of the Legislative Assembly or broaden it to, say, public officials. I think
yeah.
You had not resolved that question at that time.
How do you have yours marked, George? Or?
So I think when we limited it to fundraising that we left in the reference to the legislature.
Your records don't show that, do they, Miss Hill?
I didn't
have
the answer to that question, but I'm looking
through
that. That's the original proposal, except with the line drawn through, or any member of the Legislative Assembly.
Oh, no, there was a proposal. Pardon? Things other than
do you have an idea on this?
I think we left it in when you as a part of your amendment to make it just as fundraising.
I believe that's correct.
Well, if we take out the or any member of the Legislative Assembly, we're really not speaking to one of the problems, are we? Well, you feel that the defeat of any state political party or committee covers the
Mr. Chairman, I think in fact, I think that is probably a mistake on my part in mixing up the original one and then the one Chuck redrafted. In fact, I'm pretty sure that Representative Cole is absolutely correct on that point. That we, in redrawing that to use the term monetary payment for fundraising activity, we intended to make it cover party, committee, and legislative members. I'm pretty sure that's exactly what we did.
What about statewide elected officials? We haven't got that in the other lobbying bill yet, though.
No.
What do you have? Do you have it written out, Ann?
What I'm talking about here, when I said check section 10, legislative council.
This is one you had drafted up for tonight, with that, and that was your understanding of the way we have it.
Yeah, but this afternoon when I marked these things out, Chuck, I'm sure, was absolutely correct in bringing it to us in that condition. It was my mistake in crossing that out, frankly, because earlier we had discussed taking the legislator out because he wouldn't be able to take anything of value, but then we reworded it to say any monetary payment to a fundraising activity, which would be separate from the lobby of taking the legislator to lunch, so that we said under those conditions we'll put him back in. And it was my mistake. I went and tried to make the informed decision.
Of any, should that have of any elected official? Because I think we're talking about state offices as well, legislators, aren't we?
Right. You could say, or any
state political party committee or elected official.
As described in subsection 10 and section 2. You can get all those statewide officials that we name, including the district attorney and the judges. Mm-hmm.
What do we care about them doing?
We don't.
That's correct. So if you just restore the language and leave the other guys out, if he wanted to have a fundraiser during the legislative session, he could.
I don't think that's too much of our business. I don't think that's what the Clay Myers does is too much of our business, isn't it? Or Jim Redden or anybody like that, as far as this bill is concerned. It really is, though. But that part of it I'm not sure about. Okay, why don't we restore the language that's there, or any member of the Legislative Assembly, and then do you think it reads all right? Do you have a copy of this? If we restore that language, are we doing what we want to do? Ed, Peg? Any fundraising activity to aid or promote the interest of any legislative member? Or if any member of the Legislative Assembly. I think that's what we're talking about. I'm satisfied with it if we put that language back in. Is everybody else? You want to take a formal vote on it, or have we already done it?
There's no problem with it.
Okay, I move the adoption of the proposed amendment. I'll try to make it formal.
Okay.
The whole amendment?
The whole amendment, including what's been inadvertently left out. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Is that your call?
No.
Difference, I guess. Yes, it does. What's your objection, Judge?
Well, I guess philosophically, or however you want to put it, I just don't think
it's necessary.
Okay.
You vote however. Well, if there's only four of us,
it can't pass, so you vote however you want it.
That's what I'm saying. Mr. Chairman, what will we do if it fails? Then will we try to come up with a compromise language?
or just take it out?
Well, we just leave it out if it fails.
I'm not happy with the language, but I think we need something along these lines.
Well, if you want to try it again, some other wording that pleases you better, maybe the other two would accept that.
My attorney over there.
I don't know what you have in mind there.
Well, this is a little bit strong right here, but I think we need... I think the way it was stated earlier, we need some way to protect the lobbyists, too. And I don't know how to say that, George.
From allegating them?
Right.
What was the term, Mr. Chairman? Working on the floor?
Well, Ed, if you want to...
Well, I can... I'll vote yes. There doesn't... It's going to be a standoff, so this is going to make it.
Yes. Okay, the motion fails. Now we're on 7?
Yeah. Rule 7. That's page 5. Section 7, subsection 1, paragraph C.
Let's go back to 8 for a second, because, Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering about the terminology of all offices.
Where are you?
Is this intended to include any office of any committee, like your secretary or rotary?
Right. Trustee of the college or
member of the church council, that sort of thing? Everything like that?
That's the intent. If the Senate members put it together,
your idea that would be one way to give an indication of other outside interests that may have something outside of a monetary interest, which are probably included in campaign biographies anyway, if they are.
Do you have a suggestion, George, for changing and approving?
Well, I was thinking of public office. I'm not sure if you're appointed to the Public Planning Commission.
Well, and if you were a director of the Right to Life Committee, that's one of the things that working with the legislature and we're not, is not a public office. Something in common cause. I know what they're trying to get at. I know that many of us are on boards and other things that have absolutely nothing to do with legislation. It's all inclusive. Okay, let's go on unless you can think of something better. Anishi, isn't that startling?
Okay, we left off.
Are we going to do something about real property?
Yeah. The
amended worksheet that came back should actually, in the last, second to last line, I strike direct or indirect. That language actually came out.
That's right.
Took that out.
That's right.
But you have it ownership. Has had ownership?
Yes. Has or has had ownership during the preceding year. Any interest in including an option to buy, striking direct or indirect.
Right. What's that, John?
Or any interest?
Yes,
or has ownership during the preceding year, any interest?
Or any interest.
Or any interest, including an option to buy.
Well, or any interest, including an
ownership of any interest.
No, there's a comma there. Description of all real estate in which he or a member of his household has or has had ownership during the preceding year. Comma. Or any interest, including an option to buy. You put or and take out that other. That.
So you don't need to put ownership in if it's any
interest.
That's pretty well covered.
Or an option, any option to buy, which is another category.
Well, any interest would be a leasehold interest.
Yeah.
Life estate.
The description of all real estate in which he or a member of his household has or has had during the preceding year. Or any interest, including the option to buy.
Yeah, that would work. Has or had during the preceding year any interest, including an option to buy. That would work. They got ownership in the other or, so they would read all right.
Well, because it's both present and past tense. If you sold the property, then you have to say has had, don't you?
Wouldn't
has
had cover
had? Has or had. I think it's just a little bit better grammar to put the has in there. I think it doesn't read as well, but I think it's better grammar. The description of all real estate in which he or a member of this household has or has had during the preceding year or any interest, including an option to buy. I just put a left it alone except for an or after that comma.
Sound okay without ownership?
I think it is.
You don't need the other or in there, then, do you?
Preceding
year. Yeah. Any interest. I would leave the or out.
If
you take out the or, it would then read the description of all real estate in which he or a member of his household has or had during the preceding year any interest, comma, including an option to buy.
Yeah, take out
the comma and the or, and you've got it.
You left out the has.
Has or has had during the preceding year.
And you left out the has. His household has or had during the preceding year.
Right, has had. George.
I think George is right on that has, that second has.
Okay. It says the same thing beforehand.
Take out the has.
Mm-hmm. In other words, we're down to the original language minus the has.
Yeah, I think that's where we are.
I'm concerned about what kind of description you're going to require. For example,
refers it just to the title? Would you have to describe it?
I would say I got 50 acres in Section Show Township, so.
What if we change the word from description to listing?
Well, yeah, the first one, it first read the legal description, and that was the legal was struck because of that question that Representative Johnson raised, and the Senate member said, well, that would probably be all right, you could list range and township for a piece of property and use the descriptive factor.
If
you had the listing, you can go back to the county seat. The things are filed with and get the legal description.
How about we said the listing by common or legal description? Would that cover the common, cover 50 acres and township, so on?
Not that familiar.
Or the house at 1221 8th Avenue?
That's all we're talking about.
Real property lawyers jargon to be able to tell you whether
common or description is generally the what you know it as. So, Smith House on the corner of 8th.
So, you would read the listing by legal description
or common.
Common description.
Or common.
Because the reason that they put struck legal the first time was to give them the option of the common description.
The listing by legal or common description of all real estate in which he or a member of his household has or had during the preceding year any interest, including an option to buy. You said any interest covers the multitude of sin there, George. Are you? Do we need any interest in there?
We've got to designate what it is that you
could put ownership back in there. Has or had during the preceding year. Any interest in strike that up?
Any ownership interest?
Including an option to
buy. Narrow down a little bit more.
Okay, let's take ownership interest in there, because that's what we're talking about, isn't it?
Ownership interest?
Mm-hmm. Strike out any interest?
No.
Just
any ownership interest. But it would not need rentals or anything like that. Okay, are we through with that, Matt?
Yeah, I think so.
And we'll go on to page 6 of the...
The only problem we still have with that listing of real property is that you have to list in any... Well, let's see, member of household, that doesn't include this.
That's spouse and any children.
Yeah, so you have to worry about trying to list everything in the corporation, not only that you might have to...
Let me go to H.
No, I think we go to A, B, C. You think we go to C?
Well, then we're not on page 6 now. Page 5 of the other one.
All right. It would be the general category or source of income, whether or not taxable, in excess of $500 received by him or a member of his household during the preceding year.
That's
intended to be $500 from each category.
The general category, or each source of income. Is that what you want in there?
Well, I just want to be sure that the $500 makes each category a source. In other words, we're not talking about total of $500.
Well, you could just put strike Z and just put each general category source of income, whether or not taxable, and that goes to $500.
Thank you. Which one am I on?
May 31st.
Right.
Say the source. If you were getting, like I might made a mistake in the case of a doctor patient or a
medical
attorney or client. Professional services, and you lump them all together. See, a lawyer can get, then again, I don't think that was the intent, because a lawyer could be getting part of his revenue, public body that he represents. Or a retainer from some corporation.
What was the sense of the Senate?
Well, the problem the Senate used, the example they used was the problem of somebody who ran a business like a service station or something else, and they said source of income used that particular list all of his customers. In the same relation a doctor or an attorney would have to list each patient or client. So they said they added, the original language was the source of income. So they put in general categories to say that, okay, the attorney could say law practice in such and such city, Oregon, X dollars, and then in excess of $500, just listed.
Intended to be that zero?
Yeah, right.
You wouldn't have to name clients that you receive more than $500.
Right. And for any other sources of income, if you had a particular source, stock, dividends, $500 or more, sale property, $500 or more. And it was set at 500 so that you wouldn't catch juvenile members of that household who might back earn some money during the year, and it would be a continual hassle.
If you look at D, George, and put the two of them together, maybe that makes the...
That isn't 25,000, that's 2,500 as a typo there.
Well, I just wanted to get clarified as to whether the 500 relates to each source of income within a general category.
No. You just put down law practice.
Right. Yes.
And then you say stocks and bonds.
Right.
And then you say timber sales, and that's what you, that would be your listing. Slam digging.
Mm-hmm. I haven't dug one yet in my life. Found the hole that's for you.
I think that's probably all right.
Yeah, the intent was that you could, if given a situation where you'd have some situation you'd have to list 300 or 400 separate individual places you got money from, you could lump them under a general category. If you had one thing where you had one discrete thing you could name, you just go ahead and name it that particular source. Under D, the corporate name of any corporation in which he or a member of his household or business with which he is associated holds stock with a fair market value of $2,500 or more. Not $2,500.
Well, now what's that do with mutual funds?
Well, you get to name the mutual fund. The decision was is you could put down X mutual fund. The only time you'd have to name the holdings of that mutual fund was that if you actually had a 10% share of it under the definition of business with which he's associated. If you own 10% of the outstanding shares in the mutual fund, then you'd probably get in trouble on that one.
You probably wouldn't be running for the Oregon legislature.
That was also
okay. Is that all right with everybody?
Well, let's see. If I own stock in X corporation exceeding 10% of the outstanding share, and that corporation owns stock in another corporation over 2,500, and I would have to declare
as an interest. If in fact that brought you an excess of $500 in income in that year, yes, you would.
Why
does
that doesn't say that?
Well, you'd have a two-step process.
Hold stock. And just hold stock. The market value
is anybody
income
from
that corporation.
Oh. If you have, say you have $2,500 in shares in the company, but you don't own
10%. No, to be a business with which I'm associated, I have to be a director, an officer, an owner, employee of X Corporation, and it's my own job, or I'm an employee of Ed Lindquist. And he owns $2,500 worth of stock in some corporation. I've got to declare it. How the heck am I ever going to know that?
I'm not absolutely sure, but that's the way, that's the result.
Do you have an answer for that, Bill? Or
for that language?
Well, if you're going to attend the meetings, you got to listen.
Lance, the problem is that you've got, under the definition of business with which he's associated, on the first page, says business with which he's associated means any business with person or a member of his household is a director, officer, owner, or employee.
When we originally introduced the amendment, we had it simply read the corporate name of the corporation for he or another in his household, or a business if he has 10% in business. And then I believe at that time we had added a new phrase on the front, the business with which he associated with him. So then this is a
we don't have business in the describing the real estate. We don't have business in describing income. Why do we need business in describing stockholding?
Well, the idea was if someone owns 10% of a business, then you want to know the name of that business.
Well, yeah, but you've got a loophole there.
We're talking now about having to list a corporation in which my employer might hold $2,500 worth of stock. And how am I going to know that?
Or is he, in fact, even going to tell you if you ask him?
Yeah, he wouldn't tell me that.
I think that would probably be a loophole in the bill, which you could take out by either qualifying business which you associated or take it out one or the other. But otherwise, you're correct. If you, any business, you were employed by a business and they had holdings of $1 million broken up into $2,500 lots, you have to list all of them. You're probably right.
I think you take out business and you're probably all right. The corporate name of any corporation.
Business with which he is associated.
Mm-hmm. Our original amendment read, we went to source by naming of stocks or bonds if he or a member of his household is holder 10% or more of the outstanding shares of stock in any one corporation, or holder of stock in any one corporation, the fair market value of $2,500.
Yeah, and they reworded that.
Right.
This is a result of that of the Senate members rewording of that, which left it.
Yeah, and then I guess I really haven't looked at that quote, but our original amendment is not rewritten.
Right.
I think you've got to take out the whole clause.
Business with which he is associated.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably conform if you were a director, officer, or owner.
I have to take out the
or
employee.
But if you're an employee or if you're you own 10% of the stock, you might have lost a lot of this stuff.
Sure would.
I wonder why they needed it at all.
In the definition of business which you associated?
No.
Oh, here.
As long as you have the corporate name of any corporation in which he or any member of his household
holds stock. And then under business which you associated means the other thing, or, and in addition, 10% or more of the outstanding shares, which is stand. Right.
I think better take out or business with which he is associated. Just take the clause out of there.
Okay. You catch it under G, the name of each business which he or a member of his household has been associated during the proceeding year. So you'd get him and it's 10% holding. And you wouldn't confuse it with D.
Okay, let's take it out.
Okay.
Or business with which he is associated. Take that clause out. The corporate name of any corporation in which he or any member of his household holds stock with a fair market value of $2,500 or more. Why don't you just say exceeding, with a fair market value exceeding $2,500? Same thing, I guess. Pardon?
I don't believe that $2,500.
Okay, with everybody? E, the name of any source which accounts for 10% or more of the gross receipts of the household in the preceding year.
Okay, this was an amendment that came to us from Common Cause, and the intent was to get a accurate profile on what the family income was, in fact, in addition to listing without putting a dollar value on it, getting an accurate reflection profile of family income. So you don't put a dollar figure on it, but you do say, this is a small interest, this is a large interest.
But 10% or more of Ed's income might be 100% higher than 10% or more of my income in a given situation.
The result would be, of course, you've got a choice of 9 possible listings. Yeah. So that one person might have
a category and source of income. They're going to have a listing at 10,000. You're breaking it down.
Yeah, right.
Why?
Well, the intent would be that somebody who had one would, or two would list two, and someone else would have
up to $500. $500 in every general category.
Right,
blinded. So why do it again?
Blanche?
10% is likely to be more than $500 in most.
So that you have a range of 9 absolute possible sources you would list.
So, one of the reasons is to give you a little more of an understanding without needing any dollar figures. How much of an interest someone may have in this, you want to use that as a basic suggestion. If you have 10% of the gross receipts, for instance, of your salary, or if you work in a business, with some certain points, then it would be gained. Or if you're working for, if 10% of your grocery receipts is from the Portland Public School District, would be missed. It would be part of my part. The idea being that this would give a judgment on salary, whether without meaning, whether you have $500,000, $50,000, or $5,000, but it would be a level of impact. Without that, all you know is that each of you may have over $500 in gross receipts from any source, a broad general. There's really no way of any impact in telling how it affects the individual.
Well, if you're on welfare, Blanche, do food stamps count?
Well, if you're in the legislature or public education,
Representative Cole has moved that E be struck. Any discussion? Clerk, call roll.
Representative Cole?
Aye.
Representative Riley?
No.
Representative Lindquist?
No.
Representative Engel?
Aye.
How many combinations can we have?
F, the name of each creditor to whom he or a member of his household owes or has owed during the preceding year money in excess of $2,000 and interest rate thereon, if any. What if I loan my knothead son $2,000 to buy a car?
Then you're going to list it.
I'm going to list it. No, he'd have to list it, but would I?
The son would have to list it.
Yeah, the son would if he were going to run.
You'd have to list it because he's a member of your household.
But he doesn't live with me.
He's not a member of your household.
Okay. Any problems with F?
property you own.
Son
goes down to the bank and borrows $2,200 to buy a car, and you have to list it.
If he lives with me.
If he lives with you.
Yeah. Okay, any objections?
I'm wondering about the 2,000. Why are we getting into office? Looks like the $500 is going to have to lift everybody to 10%.
I wonder if this is similar to Washington law. Well, I know they're having a lot of trouble with theirs. No, I'm thinking if they have them in Washington, we don't want it.
No.
What do you want to do? Raise the rate, charge, or...
Yes, I would like to see the 2,000
raised
to 35.
35? That's not a very big.
Well,
I think most of them are going to have cars in this category if we don't raise it. That's not really what the public is interested in, I assume. How much will household finance loan now?
The bill passed 5 years.
I think we made that $5,000 last year, didn't we? Okay, it's been moved that we raise the amount there to $3,500.
I amend.
All right, the motion before us is to amend that to $5,000. Kirk, call the roll.
Representative Paul.
Aye.
Representative Riley.
Aye.
Representative Leifert.
Aye.
Representative Engel.
No.
$5,000.
Yeah, that won't include a tornado, will it?
No.
Or it would. It would.
It would not.
No. The name of each business with which he or a member of his household has been associated during the preceding year. If any such business with which he or a member of his household is associated, does business with, or is regulated by any state agency with which he is connected, he shall specify the nature of such business or regulation. Okay, the name of each business with which he or a member of his household has been associated during the preceding year.
Okay. It's regulated by any state agency.
I don't really know what the rest of that sentence is for.
Well, the
second sentence.
Right. The intent was to, if you are a, you're filing and you're a director of a state agency or a division head or a department head of a state agency or a member of a board or commission, and you have a business, a private business in addition, and you're selling to the agency or you're regulated, your business is regulated by the agency you're an employee or a public official in, then you have to list that. So if you're on the state highway commission and you've got a plan of gravel business, or if you're a director of mental health or you're the health department and you're selling hospital equipment or any other comparable. The idea being that you have, if you're an officer, director, owner, employee, or holder of 10% or more of stock in a business, and that business that you're associated with does business with the state, you have to listen.
Any objections?
Well, I think we ought to have provision for knowledge. And again, we're down to this, whether the employee is going to know whether the business with which he is associated does business or is regulated.
one example that was used when the Senate considered extending that and putting that in was to say that if you were involved in nursing home regulation and you own or have an interest in a string of nursing homes, then it's very important in some way that you would detail what that was. Be able to state, yes, indeed, I have these X, Y, Z interests, and they're regulated by ABC agency.
Well, supposing you're a nurse in one of these nursing homes, how do you know?
Maybe your spouse or someone in your household is.
Just get all this stuff.
Similar language. And then they tighten it up and say if you were in the agency that was regulating the business you're associated with, so that if you were working for one agency and you had a company that was being regulated by another agency, you didn't have to file. The only you file is those that's being regulated by the agency you're connected with.
That's regulated by the state agency. You know, everything.
It would include probably a restaurant if you got a license.
Well, a restaurant is regulated, you know.
By how many different agencies?
Let's see, I think the original bill says a list of businesses with which he is associated that do business with or who are regulated by the state, and a description of the nature of such business or regulation.
And it's much broader. This one narrows it down to just the agency you're connected with.
George, you have a motion?
Well, I'm trying to read this. Does it business with or is regulated by any state agency with which he is connected?
In God's name, to just get through the Senate committee.
This would narrow it.
Takes too much to kill it.
After three, this is the result of three separate drafts.
Which he is
working, working, working at it.
I don't know whether they're trying to kill it or not.
Says if you have a business and it's regulated by any state agency, that business is.
With which
you're associated.
I'm connected. I have no idea that.
Right. If you're a highway commissioner and you have businesses that are regulated by the highway commission or doing business with the highway commission, and you have to list them. If you're a highway commissioner and you have businesses that are doing business with the agriculture department, you don't list those.
Okay, I see. I was thinking it as a state legislator, I'm connected with everything that has a bill in this session. I'm connected with any state agency that has a budget before me.
Now, businesses that you, it means any business that you own is being regulated.
Okay, say I've got a dump truck and it has a state license, it has a PUC license, it's regulated by ICC, Motor Vehicles Department.
Well, you aren't connected with the state agency merely because you're licensed.
Oh, okay, just as a department head or something.
You're connected with the legislature, but you wouldn't be connected with the department.
Okay. Okay. Okay, is everybody happy with it as it stands? Okay. H.
If the person filing is an attorney, a list of all civil matters in which any public official or state agency is a party, in which he or a member of a law firm with which he is associated, represented a client for a fee, stating the name of each such client.
I got that okay.
If the person
has. All civil matters, any public official or state agency is a party.
State person.
Or a member of the firm, represents a client or a fee.
Yeah, took out the criminal, so you didn't have to list all the criminal matters you might take in your bracket.
I'm waiting for George. I
the
we'll give George veto power then.
Board
agency of commission.
State board agency of commission.
And also up on I, the same thing,
state board agency.
I like that stuff too.
No provision of this act is intended to prevent any person from filing more information or more detailed information than required. It could, in fact, nothing, no provision keeps you from filing your income tax statement.
I guess we can't object to that one. Let's go.
Section 8. Within 1 year after the initial filing of a statement of economic interest, each person required to file such a statement shall file with the division a supplemental statement showing changes in the statement initially filed, if any. So you wouldn't have to repeat the statement. You just make the changes in it. So if there have been no changes, you say none. Thereafter, at such times as the commission by rule may require, additional supplemental statements shall be filed with the division. Failure to file such statements as required shall be subject to the sanctions specified in subsection 4 of section 6 of this act. Lawful compensation. Or having a name taken off the
ballot. No compensation should be paid to any person required to file the same becoming.
That would be a response. Well, later on we leave and say it doesn't supersede any other sanctions that anybody else wants to put on that are part of any regular.
Is that a cause?
Yeah, that would leave them the option of cause. Probably.
Would it be cause for us to remove the governor if he didn't file?
Section 9. Where conflict of interest develops.
Why don't we just have a required supplemental every year? Instead of just the first year leaving it up to the commission.
What's that?
Well, we require him to file a supplemental the first year.
Yeah.
And thereafter, only as the commission might require.
One of those two. Part of that depends on the whole. If they wrote the rule that way, the intent was that you, instead of having them stagger all out, so that they have, you could say, everybody appointed between, you know, initially appointed between in such quarter would file, so you get them all. One person would file. 1 year, 3 months later, somebody else would file 11 months later, but they'd all be coming in quarterly batches, so you'd have regular workload.
Well,
catch anybody up.
What I want to know is, does this mean that somebody who's elected for 4 years has to file each year?
Right.
Is that what it says?
Right.
No, I don't believe, I'm not sure that it does.
You file
the first one, and then within 1 year after that.
You file a supplemental statement.
After that, you file as the board.
As the commission requires.
Well, what about a Secretary of State? What about a state senator?
I mean, as far as when they'd have to.
Yeah, it looks to me from the wording here that they file the initial and then they file a supplemental and then they're through until they run again.
Unless the commission said you got to file every year.
Right.
by rule.
Okay.
The thing that they were trying to get away from was having everybody, the one question I talked to legislative council about this, is the Senate members didn't want everybody to file on their anniversary day of the initial one. So if you were appointed, you'd have to remember what the date was. You'd have to then file on June the 9th, and that's when you file every year. Rather, the commission could then say, if you filed, if your initial filing or subsequent required filing was in the first quarter, then you'd have to file by March 15th, and the second quarter by June 15th, et cetera. So
okay, I think that's probably all right.
Section 9, where conflict of interest develops.
We say failure to file such statements as required shall subject the, what do we call it?
Miscreant.
Person?
The public official. Failure to file such statements as required shall subject the public official to the sanctions specified in. That would probably read better.
That would read better. I'd like to get the word varmint in there someplace, but I don't know how we're going to do it.
You want to make it in the law. You
may require annual additional supplemental statements. Sometime within that.
I like that, Peg. I think that's what we're talking about, really.
Or division, whatever it is, can stagger the time.
Right.
So that would even out their workload.
That would make
just
that
word, add the word annual, I think.
I think you could take out additional and then put annual thereafter, such times as the commission by rule may require. Annual supplemental statements shall be filed in the division. You take out additional and just put in annual. And then your intent would be there.
And the next sentence you can take out? Or would you leave that in too?
We left that in. Failure to file the statement.
Well, thereafter, at such times, the commission may by rule may require additional supplemental statements. You want to leave that in, then they could put one in between every 6 months.
No, that's where we put the annual.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I have to put signed by commission.
I put it
by rule may require annual.
Okay.
Section 9. Where conflicts of interest develop, a public official shall do one of the following. One, if he is a member of the Legislative Assembly, he shall announce publicly, prior to any vote on the issue, the nature of the conflict of interest, and shall abide by the rules of the House of which he is a member.
What's that mean?
It means that the option of abstaining is upon the member. There's no requirement to make him vote present. If he...
The Constitution says you have to vote.
Right. Yes, declare the conflict.
You would do that before or after you vote?
No, prior to. So now prior, publicly prior. Well,
if he has to declare an obligation on the part of the commission to notify the person that he has a conflict of interest?
No.
And it's strictly a matter of whether he realizes it or not.
That's right.
Well, if he's honest or not.
Right.
Yes. Instead of omission rather than commission.
Well, you file all these conflicts that you've already got, and you've got to also say it when you vote too. Then,
like, well, you aren't filing conflicts; you're filing things in which you have interest.
Right.
Well, right. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said conflicts. If you file all the interests you have.
You've got to try and remember whether you've got a conflict.
Well, you've got two things operating, that two guides that would lead you to when you, in fact, had that conflict of interest. One would be in the definition. You would go to something that would be a substantial private pecuniary interest of a public official, with an official obligation or duties of the public official, so that you would first
after the vote.
you would be aware, having filed all these things, say, okay, here's my
home. Well, that's what's bothering me about the thing.
Then you've got something that's going to give you something outside of one of these classes, an A and B. So if you know that you're on the pharmaceutical board and you also own a pharmacy and you do something that can affect all pharmacies in the same way, or pharmacists in the same way, then that's not a conflict.
Everybody that was a stockholder of the corporation should have stood up today and said we had a conflict
against it. I thought about it. The thing that bothers me is prior to any vote on the issue. I really think that should be subsequent to any vote on the issue, because according to Senate and House rules, you explain your vote afterwards. And as the Speaker says, all in favor of House Bill 1892, say aye, and those opposed to say no, clerk call the roll, then 18 people jump to their feet. But the natural order of business, as the Speaker wraps the gavel, is for explanation of votes.
Somewhere we can enter from the record where everybody has to get up. Half hour rule.
That's what I was getting at earlier. It's
You've
already filed all of your interests. But I guess
the way we're going now,
I guess you could just get up and say a conflict of interest and sit down. You don't have to say what it is, do you?
No.
No requirement.
What do you think about changing that to something?
Oh, the nature of the conflict.
You have to give some indication of what it is. You don't have to give all the absolute details to say what the income was, what it was going to be, or something like that.
So if you're voting on marijuana, what do you say?
Say, I'm a dope smoker. You don't have a conflict of interest. Right. Right. You hold a patent to a dope name.
It's announced publicly. The nature of the conflict of interest and shall abide by the rules of the House of which he is a member.
I'm saying is that you can get ask for unanimous consent to.
You can ask for it, and if they give it to you, it's unconstitutional.
Stop at interest then and take off and shall abide by the rules of the House which is a member. Would be one thing.
I think that's probably one good suggestion. Is there any reason that they should announce it prior?
Well, they were saying, the Senate members were saying that it doesn't mean that just exactly prior. Prior means at any time back as far as you want to take that. So that if you want to get a discussion prior means...
Suppose you don't get recognized and the House decides that they want to call some previous questions.
Yeah, that's true too.
I still think under explanation of votes would be the... What difference is it going to make? You're going to vote on the issue the same way whether you get up first and announce your conflict or afterward and announce your conflict. The point is, they want you to announce it. That's
would it be an attempt to influence legislation if you announce it prior?
That's what I'm also worried about.
If I know that this will help Ed in his job as a fireman, I can't stand Ed and he gets up and announces that he has a conflict of interest, is that going to change my vote?
Well, if it's a bill on lawyers and all the lawyers get up and announce the conflict, you know.
Well, we're going to be doing all...
You get 10 lawyers to stand up and then right away you're going to vote no on it. I mean, it could have an effect that way.
Let's make it subsequent.
I can't see where it's going to harm anything. You're still announcing it publicly.
Do you have any reason it shouldn't be subsequent?
Not particularly, no. No, I think...
Just so it's announced publicly, that's...
Yeah, you want it on record.
Okay, let's make that subsequent, and then let's delete and shall abide by the rules of the house of which he is a member. He has to do that anyway.
What's he going to declare now?
Subsequent to.
The nature of
it?
Yeah.
That's
as far as I'm willing to put a period after issue.
Okay.
Just take out.
Just take out the nature of and just say the conflict of interest, period. So any vote on the issue, the conflict of interest, or is that too broad?
Well, you could do that. If he is a member of the Legislative Assembly, he shall announce publicly, subsequent to any vote on the issue, the conflict of interest.
A conflict of interest. Is that agreeable with everyone?
Period.
Yeah. Read it again, make sure we all have it.
If he is a member of the Legislative Assembly, he shall announce publicly, subsequent to any vote on the issue, a conflict of interest. Period. So he shall announce a conflict of interest.
If they don't reword that like that, the Assembly will be here until the next annual session or the special session.
Sub 2, if he is a judge or district attorney, he shall announce publicly the nature of the conflict of interest and remove himself from the case.
You have to do that by the... By his oath?
I have a problem with that one too, announcing the nature of the conflict.
You can make a... He shall announce publicly a conflict of interest.
That's fine.
Well, how does a judge or district attorney announce it now? Do they just announce a conflict of interest? Yeah.
Take it out. A conflict of interest and remove himself from the case.
Could be a personal reason. It would necessarily have to be a conflict.
Okay. 3. For any other public...
He just doesn't like the...
Good God, do you have to like the guy you're trying?
The guy's trying.
Oh, the guy's trying it. Okay.
For any other public official subject to this act, you should notify in writing his supervisor of the nature of the conflict and request that another person be directed to handle the matter that generated the conflict. If he has no supervisor, the public official shall apply in writing to the commission for a ruling on his course of conduct.
Board has supervisors?
Probably not.
Here you got the nature of the conflict in there. Again.
Or you could write in writing a supervisor. A conflict.
Kind of unworkable. You've got a board of five people sitting around the table, and some comes up, and three or four of them say, "I don't see what you're going on."
Well, the health division board has.
Hand it to the board chairman.
The health division board has 13 consumers on it, as I recall, of health services.
Are they on that list?
I don't think so.
Any other public official.
But you've got...
What the hell are we talking about?
It wouldn't necessarily be the supervisor, might just be the chairman of the board.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's right.
Chairman of the board of commission.
That would be his supervisor.
Of the board of commission.
Well, there would be, who a supervisor does the chairman have? He doesn't have it.
Well, why don't we just have him declare it? He shall declare a conflict.
We've got the board of forestry on the list, haven't we? If they don't, every darn one of them has a conflict of interest, they can never get business done.
Well, the
If in the definition of conflict, if they have, well, the thing is that if they've got, we've got an exception in the definition of conflict. It says if they have to have that profession by law to have that job, it's not a conflict. And secondly, if the action doesn't affect them greater or lesser degrees than anybody
else.
That's
right. Affect. Yeah, I remember that.
So this would just be where that particular person would have a substantial interest outside of the class, something that would help him a lot more than the general class that he's in. And he'd have to say, I have that conflict of interest. This is going to help me and my company. And I don't want to have to make that decision to leave you. But you could take out the nature of the conflict and put in A.
Where is public official? Here we are. It means the governor, secretary of state, state treasurer, attorney general, superintendent of public instruction, labor commissioner. None of those people have...
He'd have to write to the commission. All those people would have to write to the commission.
None of those people have any supervisors. Every down to department division head.
Those would. The rest of them would have to apply to the commission, the Fair Practices Commission, and ask for a ruling. Say, what do I do in that case, and have to give them an answer back.
You suppose the governor owns a motel or hotel someplace that we don't know about?
Couldn't we just say in substitute now, for any other public official subject to this act, he shall declare a conflict.
I don't think so.
And request.
I don't think so, George.
What do you want him to do?
What the darn thing says. Well, then that's taken care of in the next sentence.
If he has no supervisor,
wonder how you get on this commission.
You get appointed by the legislature.
By the legislature?
Mm-hmm. It comes in the very next section.
Well, I'd be in favor of deleting the requirement of writing first in. If he is going to have to go to the commission, well, then I could see perhaps where it should be in writing. But if you've got a...
Well, now, if you don't leave that word in there, George, then the guy's going to say, well, I notified my supervisor, right. And the supervisor's going to say, the hell he did.
That was the question, to get protection for the person who notified, so that there would be a written, formal thing that could be filed, that he could get a copy of. Otherwise, you guys might get caught something.
I don't really see how much you can make any changes and still leave the thing in there. The intent.
It's different nature of the conflict to say a conflict to make it conform to the rest of it.
In this case, I think maybe you ought to tell what the conflict is. I'm not sure. Well, this is an employee. The other elected officials. I don't care.
I think we'll leave it the way it is.
I think maybe.
The only thing I can see is if this guy's a public official and he has no boss, he could get boggled down in writing to the commission not only ruling, and make quite a few of them.
Yeah.
But I don't know how you're going to speed that up.
True.
Well, it should include everybody who's not elected.
Well, that's what the first part is for. It's for hired employees. The second part is for the elected officials. Well, so we won't be on it all night. You have an amendment to make, George?
Well, I'd like to expand supervisor a little bit. So notify and write to your supervisor or...
Well, if you look at the...
Chairman or the board of commission in which you serve...
Did you look at the people we're talking about?
Yeah, we're talking about state agency, department, division heads.
That's right.
State board, state agency commission.
That's right.
Well, did they come under the executive branch then? Did the governor be determined to be their boss?
You shall notify in writing his supervisor or chairman of the board or commission from which he serves.
Well, if you were working for human resources, you'd notify Jake Tanter. If you were
working, I'm on the board. I'm on the.
Okay. Well, all these things are part of the executive department. What about interpreting that as the governor?
See, I serve on the Mass Transit Division Commission. I'm in the course of a meeting and suddenly discover a conflict and I did drop a note to the chairman of the commission.
Well, if you're other chairman.
He's not a supervisor. Then I go to the commission. Which is kind of silly. You can just abstain from voting. I'll say it's very.
What if you're on the court? What if you're on the court of Portland, for instance? Would that be covered in here? Who's your boss? You're a board member. The legislature is the one that makes the laws that govern you. I guess they would be. You'd have to write to the president of the Senate and the speaker of the House, I suppose, and the governor.
No, I think in those circumstances, you'd write to the Clackamas County Commissioners.
They're not their bosses, so it's the other way around.
Do you have any words of wisdom, or are you going to sit there and talk with the reporters? Dave, are you involved in this thing?
No, sir.
No. I have no
involved in this
thing.
Chuck?
Sub 4 is okay, Mr. Chairman, but sub 3 just doesn't fit into handling the area of directors and heads of the boards and commissions.
You're trying to get at certain supervisors that he might have. That's the problem. Or if he doesn't have any.
Well, it just seems to me we're going to be tying up proceedings unnecessarily on a lot of these commissions and boards if they have to go through this sort of rigmarole. Well, why can't they just declare
I agree,
a conflict and not participate in... Well, I think it would be worded in hell.
Well, I'm willing to listen to any suggestions.
Why do we have to wait for the council to draft them?
Because I want to get this out tonight if I can.
Well, that's a cop out. While we're going through the rest of it.
You want to take a shot at it while we're worrying about the rest of it? Thank you, Charles, for your voluntary effort.
You don't like it, file a written statement with your boss.
Okay, 4.
Section 4. Any employee of any board, agency, or commission listed in subsection 10 of section 2 of this act shall notify in writing a supervisor of the nature of the conflict and request another person to be directed to handle the matter that generated the conflict.
Okay.
Section 10, sub 1. The Fair Practices Commission is established in the office of the Secretary of State, consisting of 9 members appointed in the following manner. A. 2 each by the majority and minority parties in each house of the Legislative Assembly. B. 1 by the governor. 2. No public official is eligible to serve on the commission. No more than 5 members shall be members of the same political party.
Wait a minute. The public official, is he a member of the legislature?
That's right. So
okay, then you're not a member of the legislature.
That's right. That's right. The legislature appoints somebody who's not in any of those classifications.
Okay.
3. The term of office is 4 years. No member shall be eligible to be appointed for more than 1 full term, but may serve out an unexpired term. Vacancies shall be filled by the appointing authority for the unexpired term.
Now there's a change when you say 1 full term. It's usually 2. Wonder why that's on. Well, they
might be correct. They serve 2.
Well, they're thinking we'd end up serving close to.
Well, you're going to change the whole board, the whole commission, every 4 years, according to this.
Well, no, yeah, right. You'd have I'm not sure how many you'd actually replace. You'd have, they're staggered, the first appointments are staggered, so that You get so many each year.
Well, we're going to have a bunch of drunks on it.
Where does it say that?
That comes later. Let's see.
Okay, let's go on then.
So one of them ended up just serving here in the
right.
Two of them.
Right.
Blanche? You get back in here. You're making us.
Four. The commission shall elect a chairman and vice chairman for such terms and with such duties as the commission may require. Five. A quorum consists of five members, but no final decision may be made without an affirmative vote of the majority of members appointed to the commission.
In other words, if a guy stays home, he can kill any action.
If he knows there's going to be only four others, that's correct.
Where yep. In here, Mr. Chairman, does it provide for the commission to hire such personnel as may deem necessary? And how come we don't have a secretary of the commission?
Well, in Section 11, we put it in the Secretary of State's Office for Fair Practice Division and give it the following duties. However, the Senate members took out the Executive Director and didn't put back in anything else.
Shouldn't this be entirely divorced from the Secretary of State's office?
Didn't they put it in the Secretary of State's office because there was no place else to put it and they wanted to give him something to do?
The intent was that what they would do would be that the intent was that they would put it, the commission would be an independent body and the division would take care of the day-to-day matters. And farther on, they, in the duties of the division, those things, the nitty-gritty questions are referred, kicked upstairs to the commission, like rulings on a conflict, reporting suspected violation of the act, and those kind of things are given to the commission to do. The division itself takes care of the forms and the manuals and bonding statements and that kind of thing. The idea being that they'll just commingle any staff with the Secretary of State in his own elections or audit division.
When the Senate passed that pornography bill, I don't know whether we want any commingling or not. Is that your idea on this thing, Blanche, that the Secretary of State would provide the employees necessary to do the paperwork and somebody to act as secretary when the board meets?
Right.
Commission meets?
I really understand what you're going to have in the ethics committee. That should be in the campaign here with the campaign
would have whole hearings on the rules, and the commission would vote on the rules and set them up and give direct policy direction to the division.
Yeah, it's all under this city council.
I don't know the
council.
I think that's something like that. That way it won't have to go to Ways and Means.
Well, they struck all those things. The intent being that if you get this thing down the road far enough and then go to Ways and Means, okay, we've got this and we catch up these others.
Yeah, I think we can use that
space. And that way, apparently, Secretary of State has requested additional attorney and additional other staff with Ways and Means considering, and this will give them ammunition in putting that through and end up being able to get the staff that way. Rather than putting this through as an entity requesting that kind of staff.
He would be. Okay, where are we? I had kind of object to five, sub five.
Now let's go back to one.
All right.
Could we decide that they shall furnish the form?
Yeah.
Does this make them available?
We did.
Oh, that's in section 12, right.
Yeah, right. Prescribed forms for statements required by this act and make available such forms.
Yes, yeah, we wanted to make that furnish.
Yeah.
And to furnish such forms.
Mm-hmm.
On sub 5 above, the problem with that was if you had a quorum consisting of 5 members, then you would, if you had 9 members, you could end up with a 30. Under that, you would have 3 members making a final decision on somebody's political career, saying, okay, these 3 members get together and say, okay, Senator X did in fact do this.
But I can see where 2 or 3 of the members may be concerned about the political future of a certain candidate and just not show up to meetings.
You still need them, yeah.
They'd have to file a conflict of interest.
They could stop any progress just by not showing up at meetings.
You'd have to have five of them not show up. Well, if you got agreement out of the 5. Yes.
Well, I guess you're right. You'd have to, then they wouldn't have a quorum.
No, you'd have a quorum of 5 and have 5 all to agree. The question of the Senate was they didn't want a minority of the commission making life and death decisions on these kinds of things.
Yeah, I can understand that, but I can also see where not showing up is a negative vote. Yeah, maybe that's the best we can do.
At some point, it has to show up. How long could you keep hiding out without suffering public censure for ducking the question?
Yeah. Okay, I withdraw my objection, although I still have reservations.
Okay.
Compensation expenses, $292 is $20 a day plus travel, right?
Right.
Okay.
Section 11, the Secretary of State shall establish a fair practices division in his office for which he shall be responsible subject to policies set by the commission. Section 12, the direction of the commission.
Is somebody going to jump up and refer this damn thing to Ways and Means because of that?
George, he's got this devious laugh.
Well, they took out the... The reason that the Senate took out the... they took out such personnel as may be necessary. They took out the auditors, the executive director, the executive secretary, and et cetera. Cut down on the... No, to get the bill through, and if it comes through at the other side, then they can say, okay, put that together with the package of the Secretary of State and say, okay, here's a good deal we can work. If someone in the House member wants to refer it there, I presume you could.
This is not a fair package. Okay.
At the direction of the Commission, the Division shall, 1, prescribe forms for statements required by this Act to be filed, and to furnish such forms to persons required to file the statement. 2, prepare and publish a manual setting forth recommended uniform methods of reporting for use by persons required to file statements required by the fact.
If we're going to talk to phrase reform,
prepare, comma, publish, and furnish.
Yeah. Furnish a manual. And that isn't a hospital either, a manual.
Upon request of any unit of local government, make available the forms and manuals described in subsections 1 and 2 of this section to such units for use in establishing such disclosure procedures within its jurisdiction as the unit may determine. In other words, make that shall.
So that they shall also file
the concept of that. What do you beat the bill?
Well, I think the problem is maybe more acute than our local level.
I'm sure this is right, Peg, but I don't think we can do it for all this session.
Is
I really think it's Kill Bill. Maybe he died already. Okay.
Four, accept and file any information voluntarily supplied that exceeds the requirements of this act.
What's Fox. That mean?
That's all those things up above we said that they could file if they wanted to in addition. Develop a filing, coding, and cross-indexing system consonant with the purposes of this act. Six, make the reports and statements filed with it available for public inspection and copying during regular office hours, and make copying facilities available at a charge not to exceed actual cost. Seven, prepare and publish such reports as may seem appropriate. Eight, when directed to do so by the Commission, make investigations with respect to statements filed under this Act, and with respect to alleged failure to file any statement required under this Act, and upon complaint by any individual, with respect to alleged violations of any part of this Act.
We are back to Ways and Means on two sources. One is the publication of the manual and the mailing costs and all that sort of thing, and then you're also
investigating.
On a signed complaint by any individual. Would that help you? No, let's put it in. I don't like anonymous complaints.
I have
one. Would common cost consider financing this the first year of its existence, the first 2 years?
Upon signed complaint.
Section A.
Signed complaint by any individual.
Subsection A.
Subsection A.
Look up, Chuck.
Have
you got it, Chuck? Well, I'm not ready to yet. Go get a drink of water.
Chairman, I'm back up for sub 6. Delete the word with it.
Being filed.
Okay.
And on sub 8, first line, delete the word to detail.
When directed by the Commission, make investigations with respect to statements filed under this Act and with respect to alleged failure to file any statement required under this Act, and upon signed complaint by any individual with respect to alleged violations of any part of this Act. No verb, is there?
It's
no,
direction I guess that's right. It's supposed to shall supposedly hang on the first make investigation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're right, it doesn't have a shell. They shall do what?
At the direction of the Commission, the division shall, when directed by the Commission.
Why did we start that when directed by the Commission? When
make investigation.
Division shall.
Yes,
no, it doesn't. When you've got to take out when directed by the Commission, because the lead sentence is
at the direction of the Commission.
The division shall.
When directed by the Commission.
Yeah. Well, at the direction of the Commission, the division shall.
Yeah. So you take out clear up to make and make that a capital.
We're saying advice.
so it would read, make investigations with respect to statements filed under this act, and with respect to alleged failure to file any statement required under this act, and upon signed complaint by an individual with respect to alleged violation of any part of this act. All three of them hang on the original make investigation. Mm-hmm. 9. Report suspected violations of law to the commission.
Do you need open law?
No.
Violations of the act?
No, report suspected violations. Pardon?
It's up to the commission to prove it. We have a hearing.
I don't know. Should that of this act be in there? Because they might be reporting speeding violations or
something else.
Yeah.
Section 13.
At the direction of the commission, the division shall report suspected violations of this act to the commission.
And the commission will have to investigate it,
too. At the direction. It's always up to the commission.
Right, and only to the commission.
But at the direction of the commission, they do it.
Well, yeah, they give them one general charge to the division. Send us all suspected violations of the act. So that they know that they only go to the commission, they don't go next door to the elections division, they don't go to the attorney general, they don't go to the DA, they go to the commission. So the commission, your independent commission, ends up with the final decision on what gets done.
I suppose it would sound better, but it wouldn't be as clear if you just took off to the commission, but the period after this act, report suspected violations.
Well, you have to say to whom.
You have to say who gets reported.
Well, that's at the direction of the commission.
You know what, I'm calling up Henny, you got to say to...
Yeah, I do.
Oh, you do?
No. Put it down that way. They're already doing it at the direction of the commission, though.
Okay.
Yeah, but they don't have to renew that charge. They give it to them once.
13.
The commission may issue upon request and publish advisory opinions on the requirements of this act based on a real hypothetical set of circumstances.
Should upon request be asked to publish?
Yes, the commission may issue and publish upon request advisory opinion.
Who's request?
Public official often, but it's not defined.
I think that's got to be on there. At the request of a public official.
Okay, so we'll read, the commission may issue and publish upon the request of a public official,
mm-hmm,
advisory opinions on the requirements of this act, based on a real and hypothetical set of circumstances.
Right.
Okay.
Now this makes reference to the APA as far as adoption and publishing of rules.
Yeah, you adopt and publish the rules, conduct the hearings, and set policy for the operation of the division. In accordance with the APA.
Put names of the committee in a hat and draw out the two words carried.
I'm going to be sick.
You already draw my name.
Well, I'll tell you when we get through it. Make a motion and we send it for without recommendation.
Well, subject to ORS Chapter 183, adopt and publish rules to carry out provisions of the act, conduct hearings, and set policy for the operation of the division. Section 14. Any person who intentionally violates Section 3, 4, 5, or 6 of this act is guilty of a Class A misdemeanor.
What?
3,
4, 5, and 6.
Right up here.
Those are your prohibitions. That would be in, that those would now be in your other amended version that we had from Friday to get the correct language.
Well,
Grant,
mm-hmm.
Section 13, sub 2 is incorrect grammar.
In what fashion?
Who are you talking about? Who's going to do it? No subject.
Subject
is
commission shall adopt.
Yeah, I think I have to be in there. I gotta have a subject there someplace.
Oh, right. Right.
The commission shall?
Shall. Mm-hmm. Adopt public rule.
Right, I thought it went back.
Boy, I don't know whether making five a class A misdemeanor is. I can see how we could have an attorney for a governor and his law firm might be hired for some purpose. He might not even know about it.
Well, that'd be a contract employment for personal services of a law firm. The idea being that you don't sell...
Yeah.
Supplies and physical things.
Yeah, that's right.
I would much rather see us control something into the
county. Okay, what would you suggest, George? This is your area. What is a Class A misdemeanor? What's the...
You're in jail, $1,000. Corporation, $5,000.
What's the Class C?
30 days, $250.
What can you do without going to the jug?
I think it's just been
sentence
on
that.
I'd much prefer that. I'm just sure that people are gonna get caught up in unintentionally or unknowingly.
Pardon?
You fix that up the way it should.
So that would read, any person who intentionally violates sections 3, 4, 5, or 6 of this act is guilty of a violation.
Yeah, I think that's
fair.
We're
going to have a
hearing
committee next
time. Try to read that. We're going to have an
committee. Section 15. The penalties and sanctions imposed by this act are in addition to and not in lieu of any other penalty or sanctions prescribed or authorized by law for the punishment of misfeasance or malfeasance in office, including removal from office.
Okay. Well, is that all right, George?
Pardon?
Section 15. So it wouldn't stop a recall movement or having somebody go off the board.
Section 16, where it is.
We'll give them a defense for that.
Okay.
Section 16. Notwithstanding the term of office specified in subsection 3 of section 10 of this act, the members first appointed to the commission shall serve for terms of 4 years or less to be determined by law.
Why is that where it is instead of under section 10?
Could just as easily be moved up. It was in that way in the original bill, and towards the end of the bill, and just kind of continued in that place. It could be put right in, right behind the subsection 4. I mean,
if
what?
Oh, I see. Okay.
Two shall serve for term ending June 30, 1974. Two shall serve for terms ending June 30, 1975, 2 shall serve for terms ending June 30, 1976, and 3 shall serve for terms ending June 30, 1977.
That's the way we're going to determine who carries this bill on the floor. By lot.
Well, I thought you meant whoever served the most terms there.
No.
Oh, that was nasty.
Well, I think it's George.
Section 17.
Oh, no, yeah. Either way.
The initial report required of any person under this act shall be filed with the division and shall be accompanied by a fee of $10. Mm-hmm. Any subsequent filings required by this act shall be accompanied by a fee of $5. All fees received by the division shall be deposited with the state treasurer to the credit of the general fund.
Does anybody have any idea how much money that would raise?
Yeah. Some ballpark figure would be between $4,000 and $6,000 a year or something like that. Let me see here.
Is that going to be part of the compensation that the board member can list on his voucher?
You've got a couple of... You'd end up with probably over 1,000 people you're gonna get over the get them, they think.
We got
so you'd end up with
well, that might pay for the commissioners, but sure wouldn't pay for any printing or any secretarial help or
no, it would help to offset the cost. It probably do away with it would offset all the cost of the commission itself as far as their per diem, their expenses.
You look something up, George?
We set this commission up to act as an intermediary.
Otherwise provided by law, all members of state boards and commissions may receive actual and necessary travel or other expenses actually incurred in performance of their official duties. You're going to end up paying the $10 back?
No. No, this says that any candidate for office when he files...
One thing that we haven't included here is the fair practice.
Initially, it doesn't require any person to talk about all the board meetings.
Yeah.
That's a legitimate expense.
What you're saying is we're taking some cases, we're taking out of one pocket and putting in the other.
As we put in a provision,
frankly, I hate to soak those people who are serving the state with their own time and energy and money. I hate to kick them again. What about any changing that to any the initial report required of any public official or elected official or candidate for office or something? And that would eliminate the state employees and eliminate boards and commission members. I don't see why you have a neck of state employees for this.
Well, you've got somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000, maybe. That's the max, probably. You've got all your, you've got judicial, you've got all your DAs, you've got 90 legislators, you've got 6 statewide elected people. Then you've got, I'm not sure how many you'd have to tote up how many there are in those boards and commissions we added.
Why did they ask for a fee?
To help offset some of the costs.
Well, a majority of the people, I suspect, are going to be state employees or working for the states on boards and commissions. And I can't see much sense to that.
You're going to take it out of Ways and Means and give it back. The only ones that are the candidates for office are the only ones that are going to be coming out of somebody's pocket.
So
I bet you're not talking anywhere near a thousand.
That'd be the limit.
Well, even if you are, you're just trading dollars.
If he gets to take it back as a necessary expense,
he
all
these, of course, I don't know how many agencies.
I think it'd cost you more than this thing would generate for the bookkeeping.
If you had to then reimburse as a necessary expense for filing fee, you know, then you could, if you wanted to generate some money out of it, you could add just limit it to candidates for public office.
Well, that would be my suggestion.
Well, this is what requires any candidate for office.
No, I mean,
under this act.
Yeah.
Put it up in here. The issue report required if any candidate for office under this act shall be filed with the division shall be compensated.
30 days
and you wouldn't need any subsequent filings because they should come
back.
Yeah,
30 days after the filing deadline.
Fine.
Well, I would suggest we either take 17 out altogether or else limit it to candidates for office.
So it would be the initial report required of
President office holders.
Well, you could, yeah.
President
elected officials. Right. You could make them one. Depending on when we make it effective.
Well,
you'd make them $10 for the first one.
The effective date of this thing, I think we're going to have to change anyway.
Well, yeah, you've got judges in office.
Yeah.
Those that hold office for more.
I move we delete Section 17. Any discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Deputy Mayor Cole?
Aye.
Deputy Mayor Drilli?
Aye.
Mayor Brinkley?
Aye. No.
He's not wasting me.
Section 18.
This motion.
Yeah,
any hearing conducted by the commission
that
has as its purpose inquiry into the conduct of any person subjected to this act shall be conducted as a hearing in a contested case as provided in ORS Chapter 183.
Is that meant to be a public hearing?
Yeah, it would be a public hearing where the person who was the subject of the hearing would be have right of counsel and would have the whatever else you're allowed.
Okay, let's put public in there.
Okay.
Conducted as a public hearing.
Anything. Let's see, where would that be? Any hearing conducted by the commission?
As a public hearing.
Let's
see, any hearing conducted by the commission that has its purpose inquiry into the conduct of any person shall be conducted as a public hearing.
As a public hearing, right. Section
19. How about any proceeding
other than
hearing?
Well, then you'd have their debate or anything that they'd have. Of course, they're covered by SB 15.
Yeah,
that's
under our open meetings bill, they can't close them anyway.
Right. It's leading to a final decision.
Executive session.
Hiring, firing of personnel, but it's an employee, officer, agent, or employee. None of those are of the commission.
I wonder if it's an employee, if it's closed, and if it's an elected official, it's open.
If it was one of their own employees, they could close it.
Well, but what if it's some joker over in the highway department? He's still an employee of the state.
As I remember, that it was directed to the employee of the body holding
the hearing.
Yeah, should be in there.
I think maybe I'll let the AG worry about it.
I think if you did say it was conducted, shall be conducted as a public hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then those hearings would be open. But as a procedure, I'm not sure what you would include under that definition.
Definition of the governing body.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if we put the word public in there, I don't think there's anything to worry about.
Okay, here it is. To consider the dismissal or disciplining of, or to hear complaints or charges brought against a public office, employee, staff, member.
So you need
that's
the public.
An executive session.
And you need the public here to say it's going to be public. Wouldn't you?
I don't think so. I don't know if you need anything, because it's covered by the open meetings rule. However, that rule says this will be conducted. At least that one passed. What's ORS Chapter 183?
The Administrative Procedures Act. So they'd be just like a contested case, work comp or anything.
Oh, those are open.
Yeah, they're all open.
They're open anyway, Jerry.
No, the executive session.
Well, but as provided in ORS 183.
As a matter of fact, because we.
Are they open?
I'm not sure. Under the APA, can you in fact carry or have a...
Did that amend 183?
I didn't think
so.
Right. What your rights are in that hearing.
That's right.
Okay.
Independent statute of other agencies might make you open.
You open me, all this is affect 183.
If you put in public, you would be ensuring the public opening of the hearing.
Senate Bill 15 does not apply to deliberation of state agencies in conducted hearings and contested cases in accordance with Chapter 183.
Let's put the word public in there. And
okay. So read any hearing conducted by the Commission that has as its purpose inquiry into the conduct of any person subject to this act shall be conducted as a public hearing in a contested case provided in ORS Chapter 183. So he has the right to 183 and it's public. Section 19. Nothing in this act is intended to affect any other statute requiring disclosure of economic interest by any public official or public employee. Section 20. This act being necessary for the immediate preservation of public peace, health, safety, emergency is declared exist.
You're not going to give the guy an opportunity.
And this act takes effect July 1, 1973.
Sure.
What is that? It follows January 1. It gives you. Public, that's right.
Let's discuss the date on this thing.
The Senate decided to add, it was their decision to make the effective date July 1 and then give the Commission and the Division a 6-month time to January 1 to prepare for the filing. First report. So that's why they put the effective date July 1. It said on or before January 1, 1974, the first one has to be filed.
Okay, I guess that's all right.
Doesn't that mean that I have to file July 1st, 1973?
Nope.
No.
January 1st, 1974. Yeah. Charles, you've got your brainchild there, and I know as a proud mother you want to submit it to the Assembly.
What section was that?
Section 3, wasn't it, or something?
973,
87.
Move the
table. Yeah. I know who's
going to
carry this.
I do too. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, as I understood Representative Cole's concern, it was that when you take subsection 3 and attempt to lump all public officials that were not otherwise referred to in 1 and 2, you create some problems for which that solution is not particularly appropriate depending upon what function the person serves. If you were to say, for example, for any elected public official other than those persons referred to in subsections 1 and 2, that is,
other than members of the legislative assembly and the judges and district attorneys. You could say, he shall find writing the commission for a ruling on his course of conduct, just like subsection 3 now presently says. You were then to say, for any public official who is the head of a state agency, department, or division, he shall notify in writing the person who appointed him. And then if you said, for any public official who is a member of a state board or commission, he shall notify in writing the chairman of the board or commission. That gets to what you were concerned about. I may not have resolved those correctly, but does that break down a little easier?
Yeah, that spells it out.
Okay, we're in a board meeting, and suddenly I figure I've got a conflict of interest. Do I just write a note and hand it to the chairman? You want to look at it, George? George, read it. Is it legible?
Yeah, I don't know. I understand what you're saying. Well, make it more clear.
Yeah.
To whom the person is going to declare the conflict.
Read it again, will you, Graham?
I'm going to let Chuck.
All right.
For any elected public official other than a public official referred to in subsection 2. He shall find writing to the commission for a ruling on his course of conduct. For any, I'm leaving out some of the things that would otherwise have to be repeated from subsection 3-2, just for the rest of what you know. For any public official who is the head of a state agency, department, or division, he shall notify in writing the person who appointed him. And for any public official who is a member of a state board or commission, he shall notify in writing the chairman of the board or commission.
Sounds pretty good.
What if
you're not the chairman of the board? What if the chairman of the board
didn't notify? What if you're the chairman of a board or commission? Then you notify the appointing authority, is that right?
No.
You'd need another one to
You
need to go to the commission.
If he's the chairman of a board or commission, the appointing authority.
You're going to get hung up in a meeting when you have a 4-4 and the chairman is waiting for a ruling by the appointing authority and won't act until the letter comes back. Would be the one time you get stuck.
Yeah, run the power line over. Anyway.
Through a bank building.
Yeah, particularly if the commission only meets a couple times a year.
Well, they would get a printed agenda, chances are, and the guy would have an opportunity ahead of time to know whether he was going to be in conflict and have a conflict. I don't know that we can make it any better, and still...
That would be substituted for 3.
Yeah. I'll have a motion.
Move the adoption of amendments.
Including those on Friday.
Including those on Friday.
It's been moved that the amendments, including those of Friday and this one of Chuck, and all we've made tonight be adopted. Any discussion? Clerk, call roll.
Representative Paul?
Aye.
Representative
Raleigh?
Aye. Representative
Bingham? Aye.
Representative Bingham? Aye. I need another motion. Mr. Chairman, I move we send it to the floor with no recommendation.
It's been moved that we send House Bill 2529 to the floor with no recommendation. With no recommendation.
Well, then you can amend my motion.
Okay, let's make it again.
Well, just a minute. Can I have a conference for a second?
Could we hold the decision not
to register?
Could we do what?
No, he wants to file a conflict.
Hey, Rep. Blumenauer, are you or Rep. Gwynn prepared to carry this bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think there's
from
a couple things.
What I understand about the direction taken, Mr. Chairman, we're more than happy to speak on minority report. I'm not sure that it's in present form that necessarily interested in carrying.
Could we have one more work session on it?
Chairman, inquiry, do we have to make a move sponsor to the
right.
I think I'm more than happy to take a look at what you find in this.
Well, the motion before the committee is to send it to the floor without recommendation.
Question.
Question's been called for. Is there any further any discussion at all? Okay, George, question. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative
Cole? Aye. Representative Rayquist? My motion, too. You've been lobbied since you made it,
though. I have declared a conflict of interest. I can't vote
either. Have you listed yourself as a lobby, Representative Blumenauer?
Yes.
No. My own motion.
Representative Engel? Aye. Earl, do you want to have an opportunity to look it over?
Yes.
Okay. And then you can decide whether you want to carry it or not. Or submit a minority report or whatever you want to do.
Would you?
Whatever's necessary.
Mr. Chairman, our first if you're not a member of the committee, we have a minority report.
He's asking me to. Or he's advising me on how to do it.
Has he advised you of your rights?
No, I don't have any. I'll have less, too.
Earl, why don't you look over the bill, and since your name listed as a sponsor, and decide whether you want to carry it or not, and if you can influence anybody on the committee, if you so desire, to submit a minority report, well, that's your prerogative. I would be interested in knowing what your objections are to the bill as it's been amended.
Okay, I will give them to the head again.
Fine.
To go through that. If there are any objections.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Okay, as soon as you can get that to us and to Earl, and give a copy to Earl and any other person who's interested. There are several people here to worry about the lobbying bill. Have you and counsel come to any out of court settlement? Well, I'd like to work for another half hour. Don't worry about it because we won't make any final decisions. Pardon? Do you strongly object?
No, I think you mean that.
You want the five-minute recess?
Yeah. Okay, well, I have a five-minute recess.
That would be an
order. Okay. Yeah. Committee will reach the bottom. The Committee on Professional Responsibility will reconvene, and I do not intend to hold people any longer than 10 o'clock if possible. I would like to know where we stand, though, on the lobbying bill.
Mr. Chairman, I have something that says proposed amendment. Should I have a date of May 28th? Is that the one we're working on?
sure that this one's an entity.
Where are we, Loretta, on this thing anyway? Yeah. I've just got some more things in it than belong in it.
We have the Strom iron
amendments
also, Chairman, May
21st.
That's right.
Yes, we have.
We
have amendments submitted by Common Cause, amendments submitted by the Capital Club, and amendments submitted by somebody else. Don't we?
We'll draw up the air when everyone comes down first and
you should all have amendments that have Mr. Strohmeyer's name on them, and also amendments suggested by the Capital Club. They look like this. I dated mine May 28th, but I...
Oh, that was the other one. Sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. No, I think that's the thing. I didn't have everything with the bill.
The bill's in a bill book.
Yeah. I've got in here is
Earl, why don't you sit down over here?
Sit down, Earl, come on.
Push it to work.
Henry, where are you? You're here. Dave, you're here. Do you know where we were when we quit Granton?
I didn't count that meeting, so
oh.
I'm not even sure.
That's the evidence.
Yeah.
But as I understand it, talking to Mr. Strohmeyer, Mr. Speckman, you got the committee is faced with it. Some policy decisions on which way to go as far as beginning to adopt some amendments on the section to either go with the Common Cause proposal of May 21 or the proposal of the Capital Club.
Henry, why don't you and Dave come up to the table and shake hands?
I consider, by the way, that we have a very cordial relationship.
Perhaps it would help if you would outline for us one at a time the areas of disagreement. Can you do that?
Yes. And, Henry, do you want to lead off?
Well, I think the, as I recall from the discussion the other night, one of the first places where we had a disagreement was in the, there are three areas, I believe. The first one is the one dealing with the listing of the bills by number, and the other one was the area of whether or not it would be necessary for the inclusion of salaries as part of the filing, and whether or not it wouldn't be possible to file a statement indicating the amount rather than trying to break down the complete list. Now, I think we did discuss, and our original proposal that we gave, we indicated that it would be at the end of the session, there was discussion as to whether or not it shouldn't be a monthly.
Okay, can we take them up in sequence as we come to them in the bill? Yeah, in the order you mentioned, I mean, not necessarily in the order you mentioned them, but as they come up in the bill.
All right.
The definitions, are they satisfactory to both of you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, although it may well be that we don't really need definition number one of administrative action, unless the committee wants to stay with the bill as drafted, in view of some of the complexities of trying to delineate precisely what kind of administrative agency lobbying we want to cover. Common Cause group felt that it should be restricted to, at least in the first instance, to administrative agencies in their rulemaking capacity, and that maybe that would be easier to be done by simply putting in a new definition here for legislation and include not only everything that a legislature can act on, there's a good definition for the California law that would cover this, and then also add to it and rulemaking proceedings under Chapter 183. Okay. Then you wouldn't need this very sweeping definition of administrative action in number one, which does present some problems.
Do you have those suggestions?
I can supply them to Grattan Terrence, or I have actual text of language. I'd be happy to.
That'd be fine.
All right. So I'll supply you then with a revised definition of legislation.
Okay. The other one, as I recall, lobbyist means any person, whether or not compensated or reimbursed for expenditures. Is there a problem with that?
Yes, in my view, that could present some First Amendment and state constitutional free speech questions. We would be willing to see it restricted to persons who are compensated, as opposed to those who are not.
In the amendments, Mr. Chairman, we have a new definition of that, which I thought was agreed upon.
Well, you mean in the proposed amendments of the Capitol Club?
Lobbying means influencing or attempting to influence by direct communication the passage or defeat of a measure by the legislative assembly or the approval or veto thereof by the governor, or attempting to influence other executive branch action or inaction regarding passage, defeat, or veto of legislation.
As I understood, Mr. Chairman, we're going to change from measure to legislation. There was going to be a definition of legislation, which would also encompass group of measures.
Chuck, do you remember that?
Well, my concern was I didn't know that no formal action was taken on the Capitol Club Amendment, and so the suggestions last time were simply to try to clean up or clarify some parts of that if the committee wished to use them, but I didn't know that it was adopted as formal action.
No, I don't think they have been. I don't think we adopted anything, did we, John?
No, I just kind of liked it.
I think we also had put in by direct communication.
Yeah, I read that. Lobbying means influencing or attempting to influence by direct communication, and so on. And then the last word I have on that line is defeat or veto of legislation.
Yeah.
That's the way I have that amended.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you think we need a definition of legislation?
Well, I think that's what he was going to bring us, was it not? To include rulemaking?
Yes, I can do that.
Okay. And then
the definition of lobbying is going to be amended.
Well, lobbyist in the amendment. We don't have a definition of lobbyist, do we, in an amendment? Any place?
We do, yes, in the Capitol Club amendment. We put in
any person who is paragraph A.
Lobbyist means any person who agrees to provide his personal services for money or other consideration for the purpose of lobbying.
Then my understanding, Mr. Chairman, that you would omit on the next page B and revise C somewhat to be a new subsection B. So it would deal with person without compensation who is, I think you wanted the word, a designated representative.
Yes, we did.
The corporation association.
Yeah, we've gotten through quite a bit of this, I think.
Now, if you would, Common Cause has no objection to the use of that definition, if that's your preference.
You mean if you take out the without compensation?
Well, the concern is with the constitutional problem of an individual who's lobbying for his individual actions. But it seems to me, although the question still would be raised, I'm sure, that if you have a person who is lobbying, and he's designated representative of another group other than himself, that you might avoid those problems.
And were we going to allow some expenses?
Did we not go through the whole thing of the capital fund?
Yes, we went through the entire proposal.
And did what?
I said we went through the...
That's what I think. I've got notes all the way through, don't you, people?
Yes.
I'm not sure I can read them, but I've got them. Okay, but we did not go through your proposed amendment.
That's right.
Let's do that.
All right. The first two of them are an attempt to address the question of identification of the material in which the lobbyist is interested in, the identification by bill number. And amendments number one and two would not require identification of bill numbers in advance, as that would require the lobbyist to guess. And that we thought was unfair, and we were influenced by testimony we heard here. However, this would require a retrospective identification of all of those bills on which the lobbyist had actually lobbied during the reporting period. So all the lobbyists would be required to register in terms of disclose ahead of time would be a generic area of interest, and then retrospectively would disclose the numbers of the bills on which he was had been lobbying. So these first two amendments would attempt in two ways to make that clarification. The first of them would clarify what you must actually report when you register. And then the second one, which would amend page 5, would eliminate any requirement, which you find there in subsection D, that the lobbyist registrant actually detail a long policy position about the bill. In other words, it's not asking for a yes or no or maybe support. It's simply asking for identification of the bill. So those were two what we thought were compromise amendments, which might meet some of the criticisms which had been leveled earlier. But as I understand it, and as you speak from the Capital Club representatives, do oppose listing any bill number.
Henry, do you have a copy of these amendments, too?
Fine.
Do you have a copy of Dave's amendment?
I'm looking at it together.
Okay, fine.
Showing with
Okay.
We have been opposed to the listing, and I think we've stated that.
I think we'll just go through the amendments, and then in our next session, we'll make the policy decision one way or the other. Okay, number three.
Page 5, line 34. Oh, that's simply a clarifying amendment. Mr. Chairman, section 4 constitutes exceptions to the requirements of the Act.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than defining exceptions to the term lobbyist, which can become technically quite an awkward thing to do, we simply listed persons and things and entities who should be regarded as accepted from the Act. I noticed that in some of these, in subsection B of the Capital Club's definition of lobbyist, there is one exemption, which is persons who have formal appearances for testimony. We had quite a few more exceptions to these requirements. So the first one of them, in the very last line 34, was simply omitted. What essentially is an incomprehensible phrase, and put a period after the words of public employee or official acting in official capacity. We simply delete the rest of the words in line 34 and the first, all of line 1 in page 6. That's a clarifying technical amendment.
Do you have any objection to that? Dick, do you want to get involved in this?
Page 5.
Okay.
So it would read, any public official or employee acting in his official capacity, period, and you strike, accepting members of the legislative assembly.
That would create the implication that a legislator is a lobbyist and has to register. An oversight in the initial drafting of the measure, and that's going to be a housekeeping amendment.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Dave, did you intend to leave in sub 4 on page 3?
Well, that had been our intention. I don't know how much that overlaps with, I haven't really had a chance to think through how much it overlaps with subdivision B of the Capital Cut proposal for defining lobbyists.
Well, the reason I ask is because if you read it carefully, it doesn't exclude anybody. Say any individual who is not otherwise, who is otherwise not lobbying, and who does not spend $50. So you read the definition of lobbying, and you're excluding everything.
Well, that wasn't very clearly put. Let me tell you the original intention. Lobbyist was defined in the original bill in subdivision 6 on page 2. And it was thought that if the only reason that a person would fit that definition of lobbyist would be by virtue of that person spending money, then we would, by setting a certain threshold, permit a person to spend up to that amount without otherwise falling into the category. But I agree that as worded is somewhat confusing. I think it could be clarified. The point is, a person could have been a lobbyist for one of four different reasons under 6, under subsection 6, the second section. This was simply an attempt to say, if the person fitted that definition only by virtue of the expenditure of funds, then we would limit that.
I think your
criticism is well taken.
You want to suggest a rewording of that?
Sure. Again, I'm not sure I can do it in 5 minutes, but I'd be happy to supply it.
Well, let's go on, and then...
The fourth amendment is simply an attempt to make sure that legislators are not inadvertently defined as lobbyists, and so this is a specific exception for legislators, so that it's clear that they do not fall within the provisions of the Lobbying Act.
Okay, I'm sure that...
By virtue of carrying out their legislative duties,
yeah.
Yes, that's correct.
Assistant employees.
Yes. We would exempt them there. However, there is the other provision with which I understand the Capital Club does agree, and that would prohibit a legislator or a legislative employee from accepting paid compensation from private sources to act formally as a lobbyist. In other words, the state employees, legislative employees, and legislators could receive only compensation from the state of Oregon for carrying out their official duties. That's another part of the tax. But it seems to me obvious, at least, that you don't want to tell a committee employee that he can't talk to a legislator about what his views are on the rightness or wrongness of a given piece of legislation.
Well, if you're going to rewrite subsection 4 or come in with a substitution for subsection 4, this also is involved in that subsection 4,
yes,
or not. So why don't we worry about that when you...
All right. They have the right of the floor, do they not, representing...
The lobbyists have the right of the floor?
A administrative assistant or a...
Yes. Each legislator is allowed to have one employee sitting at his desk, and it can be anybody he chooses.
But are they allowed, for example, to, say, grants go from different ones on the floor to discuss a proposal that's on the floor at the time?
That is not acceptable.
Is it?
That's my understanding.
Matter of fact, not even allowed on the floor of the Senate, unless you're invited on by the senator. You can't automatically walk through the bar in the Senate. You can in the House, but not in the Senate. And to go from point to point to point.
It was called to the Speaker's attention last week, I believe, that an administrative assistant was working the floor, and the Speaker said no. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I think that proposals 5 and 6 here are not necessary. They were exceptions designed to address certain problems which would occur if you included this broad definition of a lobbying administrative agency. But since I believe that all parties feel now it's more acceptable to draw that more narrowly, then it seems to me that this is not a, neither of these is a necessary one.
Okay.
One would allow an attorney to represent a client, for example, before a workman's comp board without registering as a lobbyist. The other one would permit employee relations representatives to engage in collective bargaining.
Okay.
I have proposed amendments also that I'd like to make on the Twitter
Subsection 6 is on page 2.
Yeah, it's on page 3.
And then after 3, didn't you? On page 3? I think it's on page 3.
I think we agree with you on the desirability, but I'd like to re-explain it if you were here. I don't think we have
any. Well, it goes on page 3, I think, after 6. This would be. Yeah, this is meant to be 7, isn't it, Ike?
No, this is this would be subsection 3 on page 2
of the capital.
Oh, I see.
Chairman, a technical suggestion again. It seems to me if you are making exceptions to the general registration and reporting requirements, it would be better to have them all in one section, which is the section 4 proposal now.
Do you want to explain this one, Mr. Congleton?
We talked about it and had a little amendment to it, which I just wanted to bounce off the stuff here. The purpose of this generally is this. For example, we have a registered lobbyist for a particular industry like Barhauser, so he makes an appearance before a committee on behalf of AOI. They're also members of AOI. The idea behind this is to permit him to make that appearance, if that's all he does, without having to register also as a lobbyist for AOI or have the association register. Now, the amendment that I suggested to that was this. It didn't seem that maybe the lobbyist we're talking about was sufficiently identified. And without any prior authorship for this suggestion, I have inserted in the third line after the word group, we just put for which he is not registered as a lobbyist. In other words, that identifies him as a registered lobbyist, but he's appearing, making a formal appearance for an association or another group for which he is not registered as a lobbyist, and then it goes on to limit his activities in that fashion. That's subject to Chuck's thoughts on that and the wording, but that is the general idea.
But isn't the general idea also of this idea? You had somebody else that is, now he's using your illusion as an example, but supposing you brought down the president of the warehouse to testify.
Tell you our problem, I think, through the law association. First of all, we have probably 15 or 20 people who bring down during the first session. In some cases, they're technical people, in some cases, they're chairman of our committee. In some cases, they're just members of the committee. Sometimes they appear.
appeared on behalf of the company and AOI, sometimes they appear at our request, but they're all volunteer people. We have no control over them. We ask them to come down. I don't think that I should be responsible or make the decision that that person should be registered. Now, if they come down, if this is not a regular part of their job, like Herb Lewis, it is, and he's not registered. But we have other people who are asking to come down, and it's not a part of lobbying, it's not a part of their job. They're a personnel manager or whatever, but they're appearing for our committee. I want the committee, I want the firm to make the decision as to whether he should register. I'm not going to be responsible for the committee report. I don't feel that that's my responsibility, and I have no responsibility to do that. I'm very nice.
Is this not analogous to the city of Portland who has a registered lobbyist here, but the mayor comes down once in a while and appears before a committee?
And doesn't register.
And does not register? Dave, any comment on something?
Well, I want to make sure I understand. I'm not hostile to the first reaction, but I want to know how. I think I'd want to know how far it goes.
All right. You are registered as a lobbyist for Common Cause. Now, for some specific bill, you have an expert at the University of Oregon that you'd like to bring in to testify. And the suggestion is that that man does not have to lobby, does not have to register.
Well, it seems to me that might well be, as I understood what Ike was saying a moment ago, he was trying to cover a situation where AOI or Common Cause does not want to be responsible for registering that person, nor for reporting that person's expenditure.
That's true.
Okay, but it seems to me that it may well be that if that person, say, is paid extra compensation by his company for coming down, that it could well be the company's responsibility still to register that person.
You don't envision any expense to this, do you think?
Well, that's the problem with definition, too, with compensation and without compensation. What is compensation? You're talking about the company pays its expenses down and it's continuing its salary. So is that compensation? He's not paid in many cases. They're not paid anything extra. They're not paid for being a lobbyist. They're paid for doing some other job. And that's what I'm trying to get around.
Mr. Chairman, what were you going to put
it?
Well, he wants it under 3, subsection 3 of section 2.
Yeah, but in sub C of 2 of that section, weren't we going to amend that to take care of this very thing where the person is not receiving compensation as a lobbyist, it does come down here and maybe pay some minimum expenses, we're going to make a provision for that. Oh, no.
This isn't unique to AOI in any sense of the word.
I'm using that as an example.
Yeah.
To use Common Cause to make people...
OSCA has a registered lobbyist, but when we consider the higher education budget, a number of people came from Oregon and Oregon State to plead the cause. But under this amendment, they would not have to register lobbyists, nor do I think they probably should.
Well, I bring pharmacists down quite frequently when I build drugs, because I happen not to be a pharmacist, so therefore when a bill concerning pharmacy is being discussed, I usually have...
But you don't pay him anything for coming.
I don't pay him anything, but he's still paid by, if it's a pharmacist working for a store, he still pays his salary. If he's here at lunchtime, I might take him to lunch. Therefore, I would be including him in.
Well, the same token, I think, in the amendment, if Common Cause were to join into something called the Citizens Action Coalition with four other, say, consumers and other people, of which you were not a member, Mr. Frommeyer was not a member, but was part of his association, and they said, would you speak on behalf of that bill? Would that group be responsible for you that day? Because I think what one of the part of the trust is what they're saying. In addition, so that would, you know, that would be the dilemma. In addition to anybody else they brought.
No, I see the dilemma. My only real problem is, let's say, the person who comes from the private group is paid a substantial amount by his employer, apart, let's say, apart from regular salary compensation to make an easy case. Seems to me there that, again, you could say that the umbrella group has no responsibility for requiring reporting, and that's fair, because they can't always keep track, and it's difficult to require. But that the exemption from the umbrella group for reporting or registering that person should not necessarily apply to that person if that person otherwise fits the definition of a lobbyist because receiving special compensation for this. Am I being clear on this?
Yeah. So he pops up as a lobbyist.
He in effect is a lobbyist. Sub Rosa is involved in another group, and it seems to me a mistake and a danger to make that a blanket exemption. I think it should exempt the group that brings them in, but if that person otherwise has paid compensation or is engaged from his employer to engage in that activity, then it simply would become a grand subterfuge in reporting requirements.
Yes, but I think under the amendments that Ike is proposing, this is what it's doing. It's taking the responsibility away from the one that's getting them in and putting it onto the one that's sending them down.
And if that's what it does,
you don't have intention of either one of them registering this individual to make the single appearance, or
we don't.
No, you see, the problem is that the amendment that
we're
talking about is
the
amendment. You've got two types of people that Specker I might bring down here. First one, under C, any person who provides this personal service without compensation. Now, these people are not paid extra compensation for lobbying. But they're coming down for the purpose of lobbying. Now that's an Herb Luton or Ward Armstrong or Jack Brown or someone like that. That's a part, it's only a small part of the total job in many cases. Then you've got the person who we bring down, who merely comes down, he's a technical man, to testify. And that's all he does. He comes in and testifies and leaves. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't lobby, he doesn't stick around to do anything other than just to provide testimony. And what I'm trying to get at in my amendment is that the company decides, not me, the company decides whether he should register as a lobbyist. Now, if they're going to send him down, say, testify, talk to the committee members about this, stay down there a day or two, then I think he should register. But I think the company should decide and be responsible for registering and filing the report.
You're shifting the burden of proof.
That's all, because we have no way to force him to do that. We have no way to say, have you submitted your report?
And you may not even know you're there.
How much money did you spend down here? I have to do it just as possible.
Okay, these are policy decisions.
Yeah, I don't think your amendment reads that way. I'm going to take it out.
Well, that's why we wanted to check this out.
It's a little bit special at all.
That it charged right out that if a lobbyist, and the first assumption is he is not a lobbyist.
Well, I think the
that's right, George.
Changed the person.
Yeah.
You may want to try it again, Ike.
Okay,
we're not going to make any policy decisions. We've heard the suggested amendments from everyone who submitted them. And the next time we meet, we'll try to write a bill.
Oh, boy.
Chairman, may I ask you when that next time might be?
I don't know. I would like to. We will meet next Monday. But I would like to meet sometime during the session again, the way we did last time, if I can get the speaker's permission and it's agreeable with the committee. I'm concerned about talk of adjournment at July 1st or prior to July 1st, and that would only give us four more meetings, I guess, or three more.
Well,
Yeah. But you're also faced with the evening meeting tomorrow, aren't you?
Yeah, the House meets tomorrow at 5 and maybe Wednesday, so we don't know.
I understand that.